This is the Recency Bias, and to quote my fellow former Quebec-Toronto transplant, Jay Baruchel, holy fucking shit. The Habs have pushed it to 7 with a 3-2, a dramatic 3-2 overtime win in front of 2,500 fans at the Bell Centre on a huge night from Carey Price, who went 41 for 43 and was lights out in overtime as the Habs defenseman had no legs left. It was an onslaught. Carey Price had to make 13 saves in overtime before Paul Byron picked one up and found Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who found the back of the net and sends this series back to Toronto for Game 7. The Toronto Maple Leafs had a 3-1 series lead. This thing seemed over. The Canadians were dead in the water, and they've climbed back. Probably thanks to the magic of the Toronto Maple Leafs, who know how to collapse. One more game to play, and for the first time since the Habs won Game 1, they have the advantage in this series. There's no doubt about it. The doubt is all in the Maple Leafs' mind at this point. And this has done so much damage to the Leafs one way or another, even if the Maple Leafs manage to win Game 7. You go 7 games in Round 1, take the heavy hits, the injuries, everything that Montreal has now thrown at the Leafs. It's hard to really go deep or win a Stanley Cup when you've already had to go through these battles so early. So the Canadians doing, no matter what happens, the Habs are doing a very good job of keeping the Leafs from doing what they ultimately want to do, which is win a Stanley Cup. Right now, they're just trying to win a fucking playoff round, something they haven't done in a long time, and the Canadians now have them on the precipice of full collapse once more. I can tell you the mood in Toronto is dark. They are full-on panic mode. They are miserable, unhappy, panicked, loathing their team once more. Everything we would want. Everything we would want. Good stuff all around. And so a huge credit to the 2,500 fans who were on hand at the Bell Centre on Saturday night for Game 6. If you listen to the pre-pod, the Precency Bias that Sean and I did on Saturday before the game, I kind of wondered, you know, how much sound can 2,500 people make? A lot. Now, I'm sure it sounded like more because we haven't heard it in so long, and it's just so different. It's so wildly different. I'd forgotten just how different, especially for such an important playoff game, as was the case on Saturday night. Just the emotion that is brought to everything, how a big hit from Gustafsson can change the tone of a game because it changes the way the crowd reacts to things. Just the way they were going for the first 10-15 minutes. You remember, oh yeah, this is what it's like when the crowd is invested. This is the extra dimension it brings to a game. This is the extra push that it gave to the Habs. I mean, they came shot out of a cannon. And I'm going to attribute 99% of that to the fact that there were fans in the building making noise. I mean, Shea Weber said he got chills. I didn't know Shea Weber could get chills. I had no idea that chill was even a word in the Shea Weber vocabulary. But he was moved. They man moved mountains. Or moved man mountains? Moved man mountains. That's what I was going for. And that was awesome, man. I didn't expect to be as emotional about the return of fans as I turned out to be as that game started, as they sang the national anthem. It was a much more symbolic moment than I expected it to be. And it was much more powerful in a literal sense of powering the Canadians, through, at least through that first period, than I expected. I mean, I knew they'd get a boost out of it, but I didn't think it was going to be, you know, the, what is it they got in the Fast and Furious? The Nitro? Yeah, was it Nitro? Let's call it Nitro. It was that kind of boost for the Canadians. They just came out like monsters from the get-go. The shots were 10-0 at one point in the first period. At least power play would follow kind of those early chances for them. And then that was immediately followed by another Habs power play, which was almost a negative in its own sense. Now, the Habs power play would come through in this game. But in the first period, it kind of sapped some more of the energy out of the out of the building. Not all of it. People were still excited to be there. But things did kind of change midway through after the Canadians got that amazing start thanks to the fans. After that, Leafs power play, and that failed. Habs power play. Jack Campbell in the first period, he was huge. You know, as big as Carey Price was in overtime, and there is no overstating the things that Carey Price did for this team in overtime. He stole that game when all was said and done. But Jack Campbell almost had to be equal. It's not seen quite as important, I suppose, because it's not sudden death situation. But Jack Campbell had to be incredible in that first period just to keep the Leafs from getting blown out of the water entirely. And it was a completely different team through the first 20 minutes. It was like nothing that we had seen, certainly in this playoff series. It was like nothing we had seen in quite a while if you're watching the regular season. Just hadn't seen the kind of crisp passes, the ability to make plays, setting up. I mean, even the Deneau-Gallagher line was not just countering Matthews and Marner, but putting on some offense. And you can give a lot of credit there to Jake Evans, who slotted back into the lineup. Tatar came out, which is a bold move by Dom Ducharme. And I don't think it was the wrong one, and it certainly didn't prove to be the wrong one, because I think Evans gave that line a lot of energy on all sides of the puck. But it is an incredibly risky move. I mean, Tatar, Deneau, Gallagher, it's well documented. At 5-on-5 has been one of the most effective lines in the NHL over the past couple seasons. So, you know, it's also not unprecedented that Tatar gets removed from the lineup in the playoffs. The Las Vegas Golden Knights did. The Vegas Golden Knights did that to him when he was a part of their club in their Stanley Cup Finals run in their first season. So Tatar out, Evans in, and it really changed the makeup of that line. For the first time in this series, Deneau, Gallagher, and this time Evans were doing some attacking. And I think Evans brought a lot of that. I also think Matthews and Marner are probably getting exhausted by the Deneau experience and the Gallagher experience to some extent. You know, we don't give Gallagher a lot of credit for his defensive play, but he's obviously been very key in this series on that end. As much as it's been a little bit frustrating to have not really seen him do anything that we're used to seeing Brendan Gallagher do offensively, I think it's because he's busy working hard with Deneau and now Evans to shut down that line. But they were actually able to get into the offensive zone, sustain some pressure. There were specific points in the game where they sustained quite a bit of pressure on the Matthews line. You really haven't seen that Matthews line hemmed in at any point in this series until Game 6. The Habs would outshoot the Leafs 15-9 in the first frame. Unfortunately, at least at that point, it seemed unfortunately, ultimately wound up fine, because they won. It was worrisome that they didn't have anything to show for the tremendous effort in the first period, because we know from all these games the Habs have played against the Leafs now this season, and it is, we're up to 16? Yeah, 16 times these teams have met this year. We're very aware of the Leafs don't need to be going well to suddenly attack. In fact, this game would show that before it would finish. Into the second period, Cole Caulfield hits a post again. He's got a few pings in this series now. I'm not sure, you know, why he's not quite finding the back of the net. Is he just trying to be too perfect and too precise at the NHL level? Because he's beating goalies. He's just not quite, it's not going bar in. It's going bar out. He'll get there. Kid remains awesome. And there was a big conversation about how awesome Cole Caulfield is on the Rogers/CBC Hockey Night in Canada broadcast. He's catching everybody's attention because he and Suzuki have just the best chemistry on the team by a long shot. I talked about this already on the past one, but again, he was grabbing attention and hitting posts and making himself known. He's certainly made himself known, even if he hasn't really hit the score sheet yet in this series. Weber would take a puck over the glass penalty 4 minutes into the second, and Habs would do a good job killing that. The Leafs power play, which we were worried would rear its head in this series after the Canadians kind of let the power play find its life again in game two or three of the series. Game three, I guess it was, the series? Maybe two, I forget now. It's been a long one. I've been in and out already of it, so. But yeah, coming out of that, the Habs would get a 3-on-1 coming out of the box. But it was Shea Weber coming out of the box. He wasn't skating at all, which, frankly, he was obviously saving himself because he would play over 30 minutes of ice time in this game. And he wasn't about to go on a fast break with the boys. But Toffoli just kind of held on to it, didn't get a great shot off. So we're all even still at zeros. And that serious onslaught I was talking about from Danoe Gallagher and Evans, there's about 7-8 minutes left in the second period when that came on. And that's when I started to really believe, you know, even if the Leafs at that point, the thought was, even if the Leafs score first here, this isn't over, which every other game in the series kind of felt like. If the Leafs get one first, it's probably done. The Habs cannot find a way to score, and they'll be out of it. This game, it didn't feel like the case. The Canadiens were the better team through 2.5 periods, at the very least. Canadiens nothing was getting called in this game, except for the things that they had almost no choice but to call, being, you know, puck over the glass penalties. And you would think too many men on the ice is a penalty that you kind of have to call, because the evidence is there. There's no really shirking around it, but they managed to pull that off, I think, at least once on the evening. And this is like the third time in the series that the Leafs got away with too many men, at least according to these eyes, which are on a podcast called The Bias, so do with that what you will. But the Leafs' pushback was decent enough in the second period. The shots were even 6-6 still. The Canadiens felt like they had control of this game. You take it 0-0 into the third period, and it's all up to Carey Price at that point, really. Which is a good spot for the Canadiens to be in. The Habs, I'm sure, had no real complaints about going into the third period of this crucial game, even at 0-0. That's a spot they were content to find themselves in. In the third, things would get a little scary for Habs fans early, as Danoe was called for holding on Matthews just 2 minutes in. At first, another outrage from Habs fans being like, that was obviously on Matthews. What the hell are you talking about? But the replay showed Danoe doing Danoe things. He's probably been doing those things all series, to be honest. He's just very sneaky about it. He's very frustrating to play against in that sense. But that one he did get called for. Luckily, the Canadiens' power penalty kill was quite strong in Game 6 and had no trouble killing off that Leafs attack. Nylander, shortly after that, would be called for goalie interference, one that they kind of had to call. Nylander just backed into Price and maybe he fell, maybe he threw himself into Price. It was pretty blatant, let's be honest. And that power play was a big one. Corey the Worm Perry. He'd score on a shot Caulfield didn't get everything on, just kind of flubbed in there. But Corey Perry down in the dirty zone, because that's where the Worm likes to live. He got the first power play goal in 15 power plays in this series for the Canadiens. I'd been talking to the boys back home between periods, trying to predict who would score for the Canadiens in the third. I called Corey Perry. Nailed it. Because I thought this game is going to be, it's going to be another dirty goal. That's how this thing is going to have to happen. It's going to need to be a greasy one. And Corey Perry is the kind of guy who throws his own stick in the trash can to demonstrate the kind of greasy, dirty, scummy, wormy goals that he likes to get. And this was one of them. One of them to the point that the Toronto Maple Leafs decided to challenge it. Now, they decided to challenge it after what felt like 15 minutes in which they were allowed to review it. The refs really gave them a lot of time to think about it. Maybe they should have given them a little more time to think about it. Or a little less, actually. That would have been the favor, right? Is being like, hey guys, we gotta go here. And then it's 1-0. But the Leafs challenge, goalie interference call, which the Leafs fans are doing the same thing on Sunday morning that Habs fans are doing after the controversial challenge earlier in the series, which is weighing whether or not they should have challenged that. I'm still on side that the Habs should have challenged when they did, even though they lost it, because I thought they were just struggling to score so much that you kind of needed it if you had any chance in that game. I didn't think that was such the case with this one. As I was just saying earlier in the show, like, the Maple Leafs can score at any point quite dangerously. I don't think anyone thought, yes, Carey Price has been a beast and is definitely in their heads a little bit, but one goal did not end things for the Maple Leafs, as this game would prove. So I think that was a bad challenge by Sheldon Keefe. They would lose it. The Canadiens would go on the power play for that failed challenge, and immediately, like 12 seconds into that power play, Mitch Marner, you hero, he puts a puck over the glass when he had all kinds of time. He was not rushed into making that play. Just a boneheaded error. Yes, even veterans can make really fucking dumb mistakes, it turns out, guys. He puts it over. Habs get a 5-on-3, and they make it count. Tyler Toffoli, he who dominated the Habs scoring in the regular season finally finds one. In this series, the Habs get a second power play goal in the game, and they are up 2-0. Jeff Petrie with an assist on that marked the first time a defenseman had a point in the entire series, which, as we learn in the broadcast, I imagine both broadcasts are talking about this in French and in English. No team had ever got to a Game 6 with zero defensemen having registered a point in the series. So, hey, a historic moment for the Montreal Canadiens, but that streak came to an end in that third period as Jeff Petrie, obviously, if it was going to be anybody, it was going to be Petrie. He got a helper on that 5-on-3 power play goal. The Canadiens were up 2-0, and frankly, it felt pretty good. You're up 2-0, Carey Price playing like he was, time is ticking down, but back would come the Leafs. You get a real quick whistle on a goal mouse scramble. Jack Campbell's got a few real quick whistles in this series. Canadians look like they had an opportunity to make it 3-0. Quick whistle as the puck is still bouncing around in that dirty zone again. And what immediately happens? Fucking Jason Spezza, or Jason fucking Spezza, your choice. Turnover leads to Spezza, leads to off Petrie, leads to behind Carey Price. It's always Jason Spezza, isn't it, Habs fans? No matter where he's been, a real thorn in the side, even at his advanced age now. He had legs in Game 6, man. He did not look like he's been around in the league for a long, long time. Looked like a young guy out there. And it was 2-1, and suddenly everything's a little bit tighter. And it didn't take long for things to fall apart entirely for that 2-0 lead. As Eric Staal was out there, and I know I pick on Staal a lot, and this might be a bridge too far for some, but look, here's what I saw in the play. Staal's out there in Kotkaniemi's place, and Kotkaniemi, I will say, had not, I know he turns out to be the hero in this one, spoiler for you, but he had not played his best game. He had struggled a little bit, so I sort of see Ducharme's decision in those late minutes to slot Staal in his spot because the veteran presence and all that. But when I saw it happening, when I saw Staal out there, I thought, I don't like this. I don't know that he has the legs at this point in the game. We've seen this in the entire series. Staal can start games pretty well, but by the end, he disappears. He doesn't have what it takes to go the full 60 minutes or 60 minutes plus, as was the case in here. And just kind of lackadaisical play on his part. There are 3-on-2. He doesn't even take a real shot at the net. He just kind of shoots it behind the net, shoots it hard enough that it comes out quick. Immediately, it's headed the other way. And once again, yes, Anderson lost his puck battle on the play to come back, but he was kind of put in a tough position because it came back so quick, because Staal just did not what I think was the wrong thing to do in that play, which is essentially hand the puck back over to the Leafs and hand it over in such a way that momentum was already swinging the other way. And of course, Staal's not going to get back very quickly. He doesn't do anything with any speed. And once again, poor Jeff Petrie, it's in off his stick. We're tied 2-2. Carey Price beaten twice by deflections off Jeff Petrie. And you know that weighs a little bit heavily on JP. So we're headed to overtime. And for Habs fans, overtime was a nightmare. Perfect for the Maple Leafs. The Canadiens registered one shot, just one shot to the Leafs 13. That is before the inevitable game winner, of course. It was all Leafs all the time in overtime. And I was sitting there, and I'm not changing my mind on this. Dom Ducharme, I'm going to say straight up right now, I don't think Dom Ducharme is a very good coach at all. I think he makes some really questionable decisions, and the decision to play Sherratt, Edmondson, Weber, oh, and Petrie, of course, for like 30 minutes each, while Gustafsson and Kulak play, let me look this up here, TOI, Gustafsson 6:39, Kulak 6:13 in a game that went into overtime. There were no legs left for the Habs blue liners at all. They just didn't have their legs left. And you can understand why. With all the minutes played, if look, I don't, we don't need to, I'm not going to litigate the fucking Romanov thing on every podcast. But I don't understand. They're lucky that Carey Price was a god in overtime. Otherwise, this series is over. And that's because the defensemen couldn't skate. They couldn't do anything. And we were hemmed in our own end for almost the entirety of the overtime. It was absurd. And I was ready to come on the pod and be like, well, you know, Ducharme didn't give his team a chance, really, because of the way he doesn't trust Gustavsson and Kulak. And maybe he shouldn't trust Gustavsson and Kulak. I don't know. But for a team that was all about its depth and a team that supposedly has, you know, one of the things that we believe Marc Bergevin can do is figure out who these bottom two defensemen are. That's supposed to be one of his skill sets, right? Everybody always says about Marc Bergevin. He's good at finding those kind of plug-in defensemen who give you those crucial minutes. Ducharme doesn't seem to believe that, because he obviously doesn't believe in anybody in his bottom three defensemen being Romanov, Kulak, and Gustavsson right now, with Merrill out. But he didn't believe in Merrill either. Merrill was playing very few minutes as well. Yes, it worked, and so everybody gets to claim it was the right move. It seems like you're playing with fire. Well, they were playing with fire. Holy shit, they're lucky. They're lucky that Carey Price was able to make the saves that he was. That's the only reason we're going to Game 7. Now, maybe the counter couldn't be, well, if you play those guys more minutes, they probably don't get to that point anyways. Maybe. I don't know. That seems irresponsible and ridiculous. And the fact that you have Romanov sitting there and he could play some minutes, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be the exact same thing in Game 7, I promise you that. It's going to be 30 minutes from those four guys once more. Romanov, I would certainly doubt, is going to slot in for Game 7 for any reason. I can't believe that you don't think Romanov's even worth using for 6 fucking minutes. That's weird to me. Like, I get it. Okay, you don't trust Romanov. You obviously don't trust Gustavsson and Kulak either. 6 minutes, 13 seconds for Kulak. Kulak is so unusable that it was better to have Shea Weber and Edmondson, who just couldn't even skate, couldn't move in OT, than getting Kulak out there and maybe busting something. Now I'm too mad because they won this game. Paul Byron doing Paul Byron things, being very alert, being ready to pounce on a mini turnover, finds Kotkaniemi, and credit to Jesperi Kotkaniemi, because I fully expected him to either take too long to get the shot off or make a pass when he should shoot, and instead Kotkaniemi immediately shot. And that's a little bit of maturity. And according to him, the first OT winner of his life. Makes him a hero. It makes the kids heroes yet again. Proving that the youth on this team, just as was proven to be the case last year, the youth on this team isn't just the future, it's the present of the Montreal Canadiens. The coaching staff doesn't really seem to realize that. Though at least Kotkaniemi was out there in overtime instead of Eric Staal in that spot. So, you know, credit, I guess, to Ducharme for that one, especially because, as I said, I didn't think Kotkaniemi had had the best game up to that point. Alas, it counts. The Habs win. We all celebrate on a Saturday night. And this series coming back to the T-Dot for Game 7. There will be no fans in the stands in that one. So no push for the Leafs in that case. And they're behind the eight ball now. Yes, the series is even. Yes, it's winner takes all. It should be equal pressure on both teams, but that is simply not the case. The pressure is all on the Maple Leafs at this point. And historically, they crack under it. I think, as I said on the pregame pod that Sean and I did, if it gets to Game 7, the Canadiens have the advantage once again in the series. I think that's where we sit right now. It's a thing of beauty. I love that they pushed it here. I love, no matter what happens, that they're in the heads of Leafs fans and ruining their Sunday and Monday right now. And we'll see what happens in Game 7, but you know where the doubt sits. You know where it lies. You know the conversations over the next 36 hours or so in Toronto are going to be very stressful. And you love to see it. I just love to see it. All right, find me on Twitter until then at ZachDropsTweets. Of course, follow at the Montreal Bias, which is this podcast feed. That way, you know, in the event that we do a pre-gamer, like we did on Saturday, you'll know about it immediately. good to know, because maybe you're not checking. I get it. Maybe you're not checking your podcast feed midday Saturday. That makes sense to me. If you follow on Twitter, you would have known, and you wouldn't have missed it. Or you heard it, and good on you. It was a gem of a show, I tell you. All right. Till, one way or another, next we do this, it's going to be a fun one, or a very not fun one. Because losing the Leafs is still going to suck. As much as I've taken joy at just pushing it to Game 7 and messing with them, losing Game 7 will still suck a lot. But if that's the case, we'll be looking forward to talking about the future of this team. Was pushing the Leafs to Game 7 enough to save Bergevin and Ducharme? Yada, yada, yada. But all those conversations to have much, much further in the future, I hope. Hope that's not a Tuesday talk. We'll see. Till then, take care.